It's the start of October, and I've been surprised because a lot of the memes I'm seeing are already referencing Halloween. What? Why do we need to get started on all the spooky, scary stuff so quickly when our bodies can be fairly frightening all year round? On this episode of All the Best, we're exploring how our bodies hold our stories, some scary, some painful, and some full of joy. We're starting in the flesh at a live storytelling night in the Northern Territory. It's called Spun. Meet Sarana.
The 15th of December 2015. Most people would know this as the day of the Lindt Cafe siege. However, I was in Melbourne that day and I was spending the entire day waiting for major surgery. That evening, my surgeon smiled at me and said, "This is the start of the best days of your life." I was absolutely petrified. I was anxious. I was thinking, am I doing the right thing here? I was actually getting my stomach to be the size of a small container. Irreversible. And I did that. First, let's go back to Catherine. The 22nd of February 2013. I was in Catherine for work and I was doing some Michelle Bridges. I was running around. I'd lost about 7 kilos. I was feeling pretty good. It was a full moon, and as most full moons, I get quite emotional. And I'd had this ongoing heartache of not able to become a mother for various reasons. And this time I said, "I give up." I said it out aloud. And then my body reacted in the most bizarre way. I started crying. I started sobbing. I couldn't actually breathe. I didn't realize that this heavy crying was something that would be happening constantly for the next 6 to 12 months. Because 6 hours later, I received a text message from my father, who would text me and said, "Your twin sister's had a massive seizure," which wasn't unusual. But this time when the paramedics came to help out, they gave her some medication, and it was meant to stop the seizure, but it also stopped her heart. She went into coma, and I was stuck in Catherine, and I was frantically trying to figure out the next flight to get down to Tasmania. The next flight was at lunchtime the next day, and so I was kind of stuck in Catherine. I said, "Right, I'll get up in the next morning and drive." So I got up, and I got to Pine Creek. Happened to have some signal. My brother called me. My younger brother. Said, "Is it all right? Is she all right?" "It's not." My twin sister died. Well, 32 years old. And so I was driving back to Darwin, trying to comprehend what had just happened. I was really worried about grief. My sister, her name was Tara. And I'd never even lost anyone close to me before. My grandparents were still alive, you know. And I was thinking, oh my God. In my early 20s, I hadn't really treated tough situations in a very good way, and I was worried about starting to drink and take drugs and lose my job and become a destitute. That was actually probably possible. And I spoke to one of my beautiful friends and he said, "Dedication workouts." So once I landed in Tasmania and we started organising the funeral and the funeral music, after that, bit of a blur, I started working out, started going to the treadmill, and I started listening to her funeral music. I did this every day for about 6 months, and I was running and crying, and it would have been horrible to be watching that. And then I started riding my bike, and then I needed something to get up for. I needed some motivation to keep cycling. So there was a total recreation a challenge. Sure was a challenge. I was 100 kilos and I was starting to ride my bike, and I went, "Yeah, I can ride from Catherine to Darwin in 3 days, no worries." So I went and did that. And while we were riding, I just wanted to give up. There was this massive hill this one particular time, and there was these professional cyclists and semi-professional cyclists helping me the whole way. It was really amazing. It was really good for grief to focus on that. Then I was thinking, my little brother, if he has children, if I have children, no one will actually have ever experienced meeting my sister, who had the best bear hugs in the world. She actually had cerebral palsy as well, so she had the mentality of a younger kid. So she loved Elmo, loved Sesame Street, and smiled and laughed, and she was awesome. And then I thought, I've got to become a mum. So I went to the specialist, and she, I just knew something was wrong. I just didn't know what it was. I got tested with had polycystic ovarian syndrome. Didn't have any symptoms though, and they gave me a pamphlet, and it said about band versus a sleeve. Now, lots of people have talked about gastric bands and how much they failed and had to be really fat to get it and things like that. And I'm thinking, oh, and I looked up the BMI and actually I was fat enough to get it. So I was like, hey, now I do most things to extreme. So stuff the band idea, let's just go whole hog, let's get a sleeve. 6 months later, there I am in Melbourne, getting 80% of my stomach taken out to the size of a small container. When I came out of surgery, I had a to-do list, these small containers. You actually get your hunger hormone taken out, so you're not physically hungry anymore, but you have to learn to sip everything. Because if you eat or if you sip too much, it's like you're a newborn again. You just drink a bit more, then you go to purees, like a kid, then you eat a little bit more like a toddler. It's little small containers. So I started doing that, a little to-do list. And if you eat too quickly, you start hiccuping. If you keep eating, you vomit. But 6 months later, lose 35 kilos. People are saying to me, what are you doing, Serena? You're looking great. I said, oh, I've just cut out the carbs and eaten smaller meals. It's technically right. Because there was a lot of stigma around gastric sleeve operations. And I only actually declared that later on. So I got to my goal weight, 35 kilos lost. Long story short, Gough Whitlam, it's time. Time to become a mum. Under another full moon, candle magic, all done, dusted. Not getting into details about that. Do you know how I found out? Because I love oysters, and I could eat 2 to 4 oysters 6 months later, and I'd finished my 4 oysters, and I was hungry again. Uh-oh. Maybe this actually worked. All my hormones were changing, so my hunger was coming back. April 2016, I gave birth to a beautiful little boy. And his name was Taj Harper. He's named after my sister Tara, and Harper as an angel. And he freaks me out every day how similar he is. He's a neat freak, completely opposite to me. He picks up all these little things and hands them to me off the ground. And he says, Tar, he says thank you constantly like my sister did. He's obsessed with Elmo. He has the same eyes as her as well. It's really beautiful. So I still have those containers. Those exact same containers that I used when I could only eat a small container of food. I still can only eat about 9 meals a day. You lose more weight, actually. People are worried about putting on weight beforehand and later on. But when he's running around now, literally, he's about 13 months old. Don't have to go to the gym anymore. Got guns of steel. So I use those same containers. I'm feeding that little human that I worked so hard to get. Quality is much better than quantity. And I think that surgeon was right. It was the beginning of the best days of my life.
That story was by Sarana Shutt. The story producer was Jess Ong. This story was first told at Spun, a live storytelling night presented by Story Projects in Darwin. Sarana's story was recorded at Palmerston. You can subscribe to the Spun Stories podcast and find out more about the Spun Storytelling Project by visiting spunstories.net or look for them on Facebook and Twitter. Our next story comes with a language warning and mention of alcoholism. It's about how our bodies can become addicted and what that looks like in the day to day. This is a portrait of a high to moderate functioning alcoholic.
Pack yourself in 3 backpacks full of clothes onto the green vinyl seats of a Blue Mountains line train. Read your first year uni textbook because you think people actually do that. Solidify new friendships on St. Patrick's Day as one girl tells you about how some dude wearing a morph suit introduced her to his goldfish right before they hooked up. Drink Guinness happily, even though you think it tastes like oats and watered down Vegemite. Walk home from the station after a night out. Sing aloud to No Scrubs while wearing headphones, as it is 3 a.m. and the streets are empty, but for your wobbling, warbling self. Once inside, continue dancing in front of your mirror to discern whether or not you can actually dance. Accept the results of this experiment as the probable reason that you have come home alone. Receive a phone call from your mother cancelling your weekend plans for the third time in a row. Consider the fact that you honestly can't remember the last time you saw her. Mix yourself a G&T to toast a feeling that could either be relief or disappointment. Buy one of those wheelie shopping carts that old ladies have to help you haul your groceries home. Hear the crunch of its brittle plastic wheel as you pull it off the bus. Drag it the four blocks to your door and cry over spilt milk. Get invited to a gig your ex-boyfriend's band is playing at. Take a swig straight from the bottle when you see that the girl you are 98.2% sure he's fucking has also clicked attending. Consider masturbating, but remove your hands from your pyjama shorts because you simply can't be bothered. Plan to go dog watching in Sydney Park with a friend. Drink wine from opaque coffee cups and talk in grotesque detail about love interests who will most definitely not matter in 3 months' time. Visit a friend in Melbourne. Go out for drinks with her and her workmates and meet a woman desperate for your group's attention. Stare blankly at her when she assures you, and only you, that she's not a homophobe, though you have done no more than introduce yourself. Scull your beer in a toilet cubicle while waiting for her to leave. Throw back a glass of red to help you read The Twyborn Affair, in the hope it will help you figure out what the fuck is going on. Close the book and finish the bottle. Switch from coffee to green tea because it's healthier. Write a bad four-chord song on the cheap, bright red ukulele your friends got you for your 20th birthday. Regret selling your guitar to pay for the service on your 92 model Mazda that the scrapyard only paid you $50 for 6 months later. Write a draft ad on Gumtree for other Sydney-based musicians seeking to start a band. Never publish it. Down a six-pack naked, alone in your room, and wonder if the neighbours can hear you trying to harmonise with the bangers on your Get Fit, Bitch playlist. Invite your ex and his mate over for dinner. Elicit praise from your housemates and guests for the enchilada sauce you've made from scratch, despite your culinary skills usually being of the chuck a jar of sauce over some carbs variety. Sip your wine in silence as you watch everyone getting along, and feel. Feel your heart buzz in your chest like bees in warm honey. Have pesto pasta 2 nights in a row because you don't have the energy to cook anything of nutritional value. Cringe as you remember the whiskey sour and pesto pasta soup you left in your mate's kitchen sink on Mardi Gras weekend. Try on the linen dress you bought in Poland for 378 zloty. Scoff with amusement at the fat peasant staring at you from the ill-assembled, strategically placed IKEA mirror that sits in the corner of your overpriced matchbox bedroom in an attempt to make it look bigger. Laugh when you remember that you bought the dress specifically to impress the girl you fancy, the actress who you once saw wear a shapeless dress. Think about the way that, while the garment itself resembled a pillowcase, when she wore it, she looked more like the type of girl you'd love to drink cider with in the Botanic Gardens than one you'd just let decorate your bed. Accept the fact that the Poland dress doesn't even pass as hipster enough to wear out in Newtown. Remember that you are $5,000 in debt. Sit down to write a poem that's been swirling around in your head like shit in a flushing toilet. Scribble the title, Ode to Those I've Loved, Fucked and Sworn I'd Never Text Again. Put your pen down to pour yourself a glass of the tawny port your housemate has left, opened on the kitchen windowsill for an undisclosed period of time. Give up on the poem and message a girl on Tinder. Google how to cut down on drinking on your iPad at 1:34 a.m. Resolve to have a sober night. Invite the friend you've slept with a few times over for dinner, the one she never liked. Tell him he can crash here if he wants, but decline his offer to pick up a bottle of wine from the bottle-o by the station. When he arrives empty-handed, immediately decide you want to be drunk and alone. Hold your breath when he kisses you in an attempt to push past the fact he really, truly smells like plasticine. Eat in chewable silence and ask him to leave shortly after. Do tequila shots with your housemates in the kitchen when he finally does. Research postgraduate degrees you don't want to do at universities you don't want to go to feign productivity. Send a risky text to an ex. Scrape a bottle cap across your wrist as you wait for her to reply. Call your mother and ask about her new job. Put the phone on loudspeaker and begin doing the dishes, interjecting at intervals well rehearsed over 2 decades. Tell her you love her and that you'll visit her at the end of the month. Remain undecided as to whether you will. except a casual Sunday shift at the job you spent 4 months trying to leave. Regret this on Saturday night as you wait for an Uber home from Oxford Street. Pay rent and have $14 left to feed yourself for the next fortnight. Spend $5.30 on a bottle of wine. Email a doctor's certificate to your lecturer for the day you were too anxious to get out of bed and slept until 4:21 p.m. Taper off your antidepressants and quit social media cold turkey. Stare at a blank document titled novel and wonder if you should have done it the other way around. Ignore the train station request to stand behind the yellow line. Feel your hair lick your face as the trains squeal past you. Envy their mobility.
That story was by Courtney Thompson and was read by Anna Martin. The sound recordist was Zasha Rosen. Matthew Belt was the sound designer. It was submitted as part of the Outstanding Short Story Competition for emerging and established writers in the LGBTQIA+ community in Australia and New Zealand. You can read more stories on their website, outstandingstories.net, or look for them on Facebook. If this story brought up any strong feelings for you or someone you know, please get in touch with Drug Info on 1300 858584 or look for the Alcohol and Drug Foundation, adf.org.au. You're listening to All the Best. I'm Samantha Groth. All the Best is a sick show for new and emerging audio documentary makers to pitch, produce, and learn. If you pitch an awesome story idea to us, we'll even pay you with a sick supervising producer. Email us at contact@allthebestradio.com. We'd love to hear from you. It'd be sick. For producer Madeline Goldberger, there's a very specific trigger that brings on her fainting spells.
It first began in kindergarten. The class was doing some good old colouring in. The blank picture before us was of the inside of the human body. We had to colour in the heart red, the liver yellow, and so on. I think I got two organs in when I started to feel sick. My stomach churned, my vision went blurry. It was so bad that the school phoned my mum and I ended up having to go home. When I got to high school, these seemingly random bouts of sickness got a whole lot more frequent, and I eventually realised the scope of my odd condition. You see, I often find that when people talk about the inside of the human body or the effect of alcohol and drugs on the body, I faint. That's right, when people talk about it. When I see blood, I'm totally fine. I have never fainted from the sight of blood. And seeing people drink alcohol doesn't faze me. But when people explain the inner workings of the human body or talk to me about what happens to the body on drugs or alcohol, that's when I pass out. Even when people describe their experiences of being under the influence, I start to feel really lightheaded and queasy. If they talk for longer than, I'm going to say 30 seconds, I begin to hear a high-pitched ringing in my ears. It becomes increasingly difficult to breathe. And you know when the TV isn't on a real channel and is showing white noise? I see this in patches across my vision until I become essentially blind and eventually unconscious for a few moments. So this description is worst-case scenario, but I've experienced variations of this since I was 5. I wanted to know why people faint in response to their phobias. So I talked to Corrie Ackland. She's a clinical psychologist and clinical director of Sydney Phobia Clinic.
So we'll only see the fainting response usually with regard to a blood injury injection phobia. And when we're seeing that, we're seeing what's called a vasovagal response. It's an overcompensatory shutdown of our flight or fight response. So the blood rushes in our normal fight or flight response, the blood rushes to our extremities, to our large muscle groups. When we're seeing the faint response, we've had an overcompensation of the blood rushing back into the core. And because that blood flow has gone from the head, we faint.
So you're probably wondering how I'm talking about this and listening to Corrie without actually fainting. I'm more likely to faint when people talk at length and in depth about things like how exactly the blood is pumped around the body, what happens inside the body when alcohol or drugs are inside it, or symptoms of being high. So we won't go into too much of that. Anyway, you can imagine that the school subject of PDHPE, personal development, health and physical education, had a particularly low attendance rate from me. Every year we seemed to learn the subject of drugs and alcohol in an unnecessarily long unit. One day, we were learning about the most prominent types of drugs. Marijuana, cocaine, opium, crystal methamphetamine. We looked at the impacts of each of them. Alcohol is a depressant. It slows down your heart. Cocaine is an accelerant. It speeds up your heart. That's when I got really uncomfortable in my seat. I started focusing on my shallow breathing, my hearing went, and my vision became blurry.
Yeah, so we don't know exactly why some people are fainters and other people aren't. You know, with phobias, it's not uncommon for there to be a negative onset event. It doesn't need to be a traumatic event, which I think people are surprised by. Often they want to hear that, you know, someone with a dog phobia was mauled by a dog, for example. Now, of course, that can onset particular things, but often the case with people with a dog phobia, that there is no particular thing they can call upon. It might have been that there was a dog that barked loudly at a particular point, gave them a bit of a fright, and they've interpreted that in a particularly negative way. But it's not necessarily a salient situation. But we'd call that a negative onset event. Sometimes we can recall them, sometimes we can imagine what it could have been, but often we can't, and there's no point sinking time into it because it doesn't really make a difference towards how we treat it anyway. We can't change someone's past, right? We can't take that situation away. So there's no point in trying to lock it down if we can't think of it off the top of our head.
By year 10, my classmates had experienced my fainting spells before and knew what was happening. Their eyes would go wide and they would say, "Oh my God, I'm taking you outside right now. Don't faint." And they would put their hand up and tell the teacher, and I would have to lean on someone to limp dazedly out of the classroom with very limited vision. As soon as I got to the doorway, I would fall onto my knees and my friend would have to help me lie down onto the outdoor, concrete floors of a school. After a while sprawled on the floor, I would start to feel a little bit better. My hearing and vision came back first, and I simply felt a giddy dizzy afterwards. Often, one of my classmates would come out to visit me and to offer me a piece of chocolate from their lunch, or the science teacher would hand me a lollipop from their stash. So that was nice. And after that, my teacher said I no longer had to complete the homework because I didn't hear all the information I needed to do it. So I guess these fainting spells weren't all bad. I have so many examples of almost that exact same experience over and over. In Year 8 Science, my teacher was talking about bone marrow and how dogs eat the white blood cells. Down goes Madeline. In Year 9 PDHPE, when discussing anorexia and bulimia, the processes that happen within the body when deprived of food, I had to leave the room. One time, I even fainted in Year 10 Geography, because we were studying how drug trade and addiction have an influence on a local area or something. I don't remember. I was unconscious. In Year 11 and 12, I didn't take science, PE, or geography anymore, so I fainted substantially less.
It can be difficult sometimes to separate our experience from someone else's. We don't want to be hurt. We're also empathetic people. We don't want others to be hurt. Certainly we have evolved as well as social beings to see what's happening to others as indicative of what could happen to us. There's research that suggests that we blur the social lines between other people's experiences and our own, particularly those close to us or part of our kind of tribe. So when we see blood, we see that danger is likely. We see that injury to ourself is likely. Because I think when we reduce the body down to these kinds of mechanisms, that fear response becomes implicated. We think about, you know, we're not used to thinking of ourselves like that, like this fallible or injurious thing, these things that can go wrong and that sort of thing. So when we tie into those kinds of things, a lot of people can become unsettled. And again, on top of that, there can then be a more marked presentation. And it does sound like an over-engagement with the mechanisms of the body is actually making you feel quite unsettled and unwell.
But my worst experience of this mysterious condition happened to me in my first year of university. My friends and I went out to a nightclub. I drove because I had a game of AFL to play the next day and I didn't want to be hungover. I was hanging out with a new group of friends who were a little bit more wild than I am. I found myself standing in the smoking area talking to one of these girls about her and her friends taking cocaine and passing out at parties. Hearing this, I was already feeling pretty dizzy. But I didn't want to show any weakness, so when they suggested we go upstairs to dance, I was reeling. Half blind by this point, I had to drag my sagging muscles up the stairs. We walked over to the dance floor, but as soon as we got to the middle of the crowd, I found I couldn't hold it off any longer and involuntarily collapsed, right into some person's arms. They lay me down, and I was lying on a very gross floor. The very next thing I knew was that two security guards were helping me to my feet, mumbling that I was too drunk and that I was going to be kicked out. After a few minutes, the manager came out to see me and said, "Been drinking too much tonight, have we?" But I was completely sober. Of course, I had to explain that I was a fainter, but not wanting to offend the friend that had brought on the fainting spell, I said, "Oh, I've just got low iron at the moment." The manager laughed and gave me a chocolate from the chef's private stash and a free orange juice to get some sugar into me. Even though I had proven myself not to be drunk, I was still asked to leave the club. As I was weak and unable to drive, my mum had to come to pick me up. Like I was in kindergarten again.
That story was by Madeline Goldberger. And the supervising producer was Alison Chan. This episode of All the Best was compiled and mixed by Tegan Nichols. All the Best would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands on which we make these stories and pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. All the Best is made at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne. Our executive producer is Alison Chan. Our Victorian State Coordinator is Jordan Fennell. Our Community Coordinator is Chloe Gillespie. Our SYN Community Coordinator is Erin Dick. Matilda Fay is our social media producer. And I'm Samantha Groth, your host. Shining Bird composed our theme music and Annie Hamilton designed the artwork. All the Best is heard across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter and find all of our other episodes at allthebestradio.com. We're also a podcast, so subscribe and give us a review. You know how to do it by now.